Rounding the bend, home stretch. Number six, process.
Process.
The path of descent.
Oh, yes.
Is the path of transformation. Darkness, failure, relapse, death, and woundedness are our primary teachers rather than ideas or doctrines. I almost can't finish that sentence because it's so good.
It's
darkness, failure, relapse, death, and woundedness are our primary teachers rather than ideas or doctrines.
You know, I gave a talk somewhere in the last year, and I don't know how this phrase came to mind, but I said, elevator theology was never the gospel. This business of going up. It's exact opposite movement of Philippians 2. Christ emptied himself.
Made himself like a servant.
So we have God in Jesus, or in Christ, becoming Jesus, the human, ordinary one who walked amongst us for 30 years. And then he creates a church, I don't think he created it, but we did, that tried to climb back up the very stairs he came down. It's all been elevator theology, except for those rare hermits and mystics and saints and transformed people, invariably wounded people. Invariably people who suffered a great deal, you know, and couldn't play the elevator escalator game. Those of us who could play it, who were nice and white and comfortable and so forth, we you know, gunned it for all it was worth. It was all about achieving perfection, climbing up the ladder of whatever. And I know my early Catholic training, that's what it all was. And that's why when Luther said, you Catholics are into good works, he was at least half right. It was all about making yourself perfect and holy, by your definition, of course, of perfect and holy. But it got us nowhere. Because what you do once you go down that road, maybe you can pull it off in your young, heroic years. But eventually you recognize you're denying an awful lot. You're projecting an awful lot of your shadow or your woundedness onto other people. You don't like to be around handicapped people or poor people or smelly people. There's all your woundedness is being hated and avoided and rejected through other people. Once you start seeing that little by little, you have to stop the game of denial and recognizing that is me. And my neighbor is not different than me. He bears my wounds, I bear his. But that's a high level of seeing. I don't know that, to be perfectly honest, you know my book on the two halves of life, Falling Upward. I don't think most people get to that. They're capable of that till the second half of life. It's we first have to create our container, our ego identity, our ego boundaries, our ego structure, and we largely do in that by avoiding the dark side. That's the only way you can do it. Really is. You have kids. You can't tell a little teenager subtle things about their shadow, or they can't hear it. Their container isn't strong enough yet. But eventually, God gives you the courage and the humility and the honesty. It's more in your 40s where it starts. Now, people who have had to face suffering early, people who were rejected or betrayed, or a person who had to not deny their sexual identity or whatever it might be, they often get there quicker. Not always. Sometimes they just become bitter, understandably. But sometimes they know, you know, like I had a gay man come to me recently, you know. He said, I knew as a little six-year-old boy that the world is not the way everybody thinks it is. Everybody thinks it's heterosexual, male, female. And already as a little boy, I knew I was both.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine when you know that inside your own body, it isn't true, but I got to play the game for the next rest of my life to fit in. So that's what we call in liberation theology, the preferential option for the poor.
Yep.
That those on the side, all things being equal, anybody betrayed, abandoned, rejected, wounded by culture, ironically has a head start in understanding the gospel. I believe that.
Absolutely.
A head start. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean they all get it. And there's people who, by the grace of God, like I've lived a rather comfortable life, but God put me in situations in third world countries, in the jail, mm-hmm. people who'd come to me where I heard stories that weren't white, middle class, Catholic, comfortable. Yeah. And made me call my self-constructed universe into serious question. That has to happen. Let me give you, I'll give it real quick. I use this in the school. I say there are three boxes. The first box is order. The second box is disorder. The third box is reorder. All right? Conservatives get trapped in the first box.
Yep.
Keep constructing an artificial order.
Order at all costs.
That has little to do with truth or reality or anybody else. They can't see that, though, because their need for order is so desperate. Liberals, progressives, academics get trapped in the second box of disorder. Hmm?
Take it all apart. Yeah, deconstruct
it. Just deconstruct, deconstruct, deconstruct. And unfortunately, you know this as parents. Kids who've been formed in the postmodern era are almost born, now this deserves an hour of talk, I won't give it, are almost born in the second box. That's why it's hard to be a parent today, and you know that better than I. They're born in the box of disorder. I wasn't. I was raised in Kansas.
Yeah.
Everything was ordered. It's a much easier way to grow up. You were raised evangelical, much easier way to grow up. But you got a paper bag that you got to beat your way out of. Now, a lot of people don't. It's more than a paper bag. It's a cardboard box or a wooden box. And I had to do the same. Now, here's the thing, and I'll stop on this metaphor. There is no nonstop flight from the first box to the third box.
Right.
And that's what people want, especially limousine liberals and comfortable. I'm enlightened. Because I went to a workshop on enlightenment. But I never had to face disorder in myself, in my culture, in my church, and let my little, what Thomas Merton called my private salvation project, fall apart. Because that's what it is. It's a self-created private salvation project that you just happen to be the hero of, you know? You just happen to be center stage. That must disappoint you, or you don't grow up. Now, we were taught that by the Jewish prophets, that the Jewish prophets railed against the priesthood, against the kings, against Jewish religion. And I always say it is forever to the glory of the Jewish people that they had the courage to incorporate into their sacred texts Bibles that told them, forgive me, they're full of shit.
Yep.
Christians haven't done that very well at all.
Yeah.
And we just made the prophets into people who foretold Jesus, not truth speakers. But their only function, I mean, that's maybe 1.5%
of the prophetic
message is foretelling Jesus. Come on. That's dishonest with the text.
Correct.
You read the text, and what they're doing is critiquing Israel every step of the way.
And that one of the uniqueness, even in human history, of the Bible is its capacity for self-critique.
That's right.
That usually history is told by the conquering gods.
That's right.
Like we conquered the name of such and such God. Uh-huh. Here's how we won. But a record of a people saying, here's how we screwed it up.
Yep.
And then here's how we screwed it up. And then later, that king had a son and he was an idiot and screwed it up.
Yeah.
Is a unique in human history.
Is there a good king in the Old Testament? Is there a David?
If there is, David. His son isn't.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. So-and-so became king and he wasn't as wise as his father.
As his father,
which is essentially, it went okay for a while, but then the new regime.
It never lasts. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting you're talking about path of descent. With Jesus, there's this great line. He asks the religious leaders asks for a sign, and he has this, I picture him yelling it, the only sign you'll get is the sign of Jonah, which is essentially this beautiful picture of 3 days dead.
Yeah. Yep.
You want fireworks, you want party tricks, you want to see great things that will inflate your sense of self and importance. No, the only thing you're going to get is...
You must go into the belly of the beast.
Yes.
We call it in the creed, the descent into hell. It didn't mean our understanding of hell at all. It meant to go the distance, to go to the bottom. Yeah.
You know, when I, Kristen and I and some friends started a church, we were 28, and probably 3 years in, probably 31 years old, 32 years old, a group of people in the church got together to have me removed.
Oh, yeah.
As the pastor of the church I'd started.
Yes.
And then from there seemed to always be some group of people out for me. And I would start going places, there would be protesters out front. Mm. So when my book Love Wins came out, it was about 10 years in. It was about a decade.
Really, was it?
There was always somebody saying,
"Yeah,
you don't belong, you're not part of the thing, you're not worthy enough." Like, there was always... And so in my early 30s, it was like, wait, I'm trying to help here. Why are these people so passionately allayed against me? And it took me down into depths.
I'm sure.
Which at some level, it was disorder on a massive scale.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Kristen had her own path. Ours was joined, but had her own... it somehow, we were down in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
But what was so interesting in this very high profile religious setting where all these people are watching you, but it's somehow, I know what you're talking about in this sixth, theme. It somehow brought about some, this is how it works. Mm-hmm. And you emerge with a joy, and the thing that would have killed you, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And so the next time that comes around, you ever so gradually, you can laugh in its face because you know 10 years ago I would have had sleepless nights over you, and now I laugh.
Now, that's the resurrected life. That's Jesus returning through locked doors and saying shalom. He doesn't even bring up what they did to him, that they betrayed him. And he doesn't even appear to need to. It's wonderful.
And it was actually in some of your writings that I was able to, and in falling upwards, I began to realize there was language for this, and that maybe perhaps because of some of the more unusual circumstances of my work and what happened to us, I bumped into it earlier. But that's what it was. Oh, there's...
Good.
People have been through this. You're not alone. Once again, you're not alone.
You know, a word I used several times yesterday here at the church in Pasadena was what we were given was largely transactional religion, not transformational.
Yes.
And I'm just finding people love that juxtaposition of words. It was all transactions, not transformational of consciousness or personhood. You didn't need to face your shadow. You just got on the elevator and tried to prove that you were moral and ethical and dogmatic and orthodox. It's all about you.
Yes.
And that we couldn't see that is just astounding. But I think that's a simple reason why organized Christianity just doesn't have a lot of authority today, because it hasn't done its job of transforming people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've used that same word transaction, and for many people,
do you?
That transaction was somebody somewhere did something for you, so you're supposed to be really grateful about it, and somehow that's supposed to change your heart and your life, which is very different from everything you've ever been searching for. You've had the whole time. Mm-hmm. Jesus in the parable of the prodigal son, the words he puts on the God character are, "You are always with me.
You are always,
and everything I have is yours."
Uh-huh. And then you just rest in that.
There's
no competition. Okay, one more. Is it one more?
Is it already over?